right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton for another episode of Disruptive Healthcare. Welcome, Stone.
Well, glad to be here, man. I'm so glad we got some breakfast before we came over. Last time I was kind of hungry when we did this last week.
You had breakfast last time.
I know, and you stuck me with the bill.
Yes.
But so I didn't get to eat the whole thing. This time it was nice, leisurely breakfast. Got to give a shout out to Queenie over there. She does a great job. Very,
yes.
Very friendly. At
the Carnegie
Street
Grill
Deli
breakfast.
Thingy Bobber. Yeah, right across the street. So it was a lot of fun.
But, you know, if it's Friday, that means it's another episode of Disruptive Healthcare. And today we have an awesome guest.
Yes, we do. We have Lynn Hood with us with Cracker Jack Marketing, who as always does a fantastic job of lining up fantastic guests. But this morning it is my distinct pleasure to introduce with SIMDA Executive Director Ashley Hancock. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you.
Well, we are delighted to have you. SEMDA, spelled S-E-M-D-A. I bet you it's one of those acronyms across
the
thing.
You think it stands for something
stands
else?
Stands for something. What does it stand
for? Let's have a little contest. What do you think?
No,
it stands for Southeastern Medical Device Association.
Wow, that's a mouthful. So mission
that's
and
why we say SEMDA.
SEMDA, I got it. Mission and purpose of this outfit? What are you guys out there trying to accomplish?
Yes, we're a nonprofit industry association for the Southeast region. Our goal is to support growth of the medical device industry within our region. We were started in 2004. We're not, as I mentioned, we're nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
We're membership based.
Does Atlanta have a lot of, or the Southeast have a lot of medical device companies?
We actually do. The problem is a lot of people don't realize that. We have a lot of smaller companies. There's a lot of technology coming out of the universities. Startup companies come from that. Some of the larger companies have lots of manufacturing locations here in the Southeast. But, you know, people know of Boston. They know of Minneapolis. They know of San Diego. A lot of investment dollars are in those areas. And what we're trying to do is to take those hotbeds that are scattered throughout the Southeast and sort of create a community, sort of, you know, lockstep cohesion so that we can be recognized at least nationally, if not internationally, as a region that can support medical device innovation and growth and companies. So investors, you know, instead of coming down here and buying technology out of a university and then taking it back to Boston or back to the Bay Area.
Is that what happens?
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of that. And so
the brains leave, but they're a good idea, and that puts a hole in the area, right?
Many times that happens. And so we want to show them that we could cultivate companies here. Come and invest and then leave the company here.
And not only could we do it here, we do it here quite a bit.
Right, right. There are many examples within our membership of companies that have started here in the Southeast. IndoChoice is one that you may have heard of that's on the Inc. 500 list that is a big supporter of us.
So they started here and stayed?
Yes, yes.
Now, what is the challenge? Is it to get more investors here? Because it seems like there's a lot of innovation bubbling up, but you need the investors to feel that it's in their best interest for them to stay put?
Well, it's not only the investors, it's also industry. A company could move, a large established company could come in and buy technology and pull it away as well. But, you know, we want to attract those companies to come and relocate here as well. But attracting the investor, regardless of what type it is our goal, and mm-hmm. keep the innovation and keep the technology here in the Southeast.
So how do you do that? What is it that they find attractive? What's the strategy for attracting the investors?
Well, talent. And so they're, you know, Georgia and other states throughout the Southeast are focusing on workforce development and things like that. Entrepreneurs, we want to have serial entrepreneurs here in the Southeast so that they can, you know, take these companies and make something of them.
And let me tell you, one of the ways we do it at SEMDA, and I'm on the board of directors of SEMDA and was one of the founding sponsors.
How many board of directors are you on?
Wait a minute. Only ones associated with, only a couple of them, really. The health IT side and then the medical device side. So, and I was one of the founding sponsors of SEMDA. This was started back in 2004. It was the brainchild of John Yates and Rick Howery over at Morris Manning & Martin. And so they recruited a group of half a dozen sponsors in. And we each paid a decent sum, and we got it started. It ran that way for a couple of years, so the sponsors were running the organization. And then they said, fly, little bird, fly. And we did. We had some tremendous people step in and take over and run the organization. We have a small working board, and that works very hard. But one of the first things we did was we started up the conference, and that's what I was getting to with the investors. So we're getting ready in February the 19th and 20th. We will have our 7th annual investor conference.
Uh-huh.
And part of it's devoted to the investors and presenting companies and bringing that money in and getting people to put money into it. And the other part of it is an education-based. And so we will have Dr. Jeffrey Schurin, who is the head of FDA's medical device regulations, the man that tells us all what we have to do.
I bet he gets a lot of free lunches, just Jeffrey guy, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. But because he's government, he has to pay
careful.
Right. He's got to be a little bit careful with that. But Dr. Schurin's a great speaker, and we're looking forward to hearing his point of view, because if you talk to the medical device companies, they usually have a pretty strong idea about regulators. And then we also have a senior vice president of Medtronics and president of one of their divisions.
Yes, Pat Mackin. He's the president of the cardiac rhythm management division of Medtronic. He's located up in the Minneapolis area, and so we're thankful to have him and excited to have him come and speak to our at our gala.
Now, what's your membership profile look like? Is it mostly the companies that are the innovators, or
it's a mixture of university people? Yes. So the way we define membership is it can be individuals all the way up through startups, established companies, and the like, but also some other folks. So it's anyone who has a touch point to the development and commercialization of a medical device. Now, that could be, if you think about that timeline, it starts with an idea. So there's a researcher. There may be an engineer, a product development professional, regulatory professional. Quality and manufacturing are a big part of that. And don't forget the investors.
Right.
All the way up through the, you know, the J&Js of the world that have existing products on the market. So that's how we define our membership. And, again, it can be on an individual basis or a company basis. We also have some members through sponsorship. So companies, service providers such as accountants and some other things like that, maybe real estate companies, can be members through sponsorship. They don't have a specific touch point to the development of a medical device, but they do support that industry.
So one of the nice things about a SIMTA meeting is when you go to it, we have quarterly meetings. We have one coming up in January. You can find out more at SIMTA.net, S-E-M-D-A. .net. And so you have a group of people who are very focused, and it's a very concentrated group of people. And it's so much fun to talk to someone, and they say, well, you know, my next step is manufacturing. You go, oh, I just talked to a manufacturer. Let me introduce you. And so we have a lot of synergy, a lot of exchange of ideas that take place at the meeting.
And so all those folks are right there in the same venue. You have some proximity. You can get them together and get some things moving. Is it as tough as long and difficult to get a medical device to market as it is a drug? Is it that same kind of terrain?
It is longer than you would than some inventors imagine, but it's not anywhere as long as for a drug. There are some uncertainties with getting FDA clearance these days, but you know before FDA started dragging, you know the timeline started dragging out a little bit. It wasn't unusual to have a go from idea to commercialization in a year and a half to 2 years for some of the more simple medical devices, whereas with pharma, it's several years.
Right. We'd starve to death if we had to wait 2 years to do the next thing we want to do in our business. I mean,
yeah, I don't have the patience for that.
Really? And neither does my wife. And she's the one with a real job.
But there's a lot of stuff that goes on and a lot of things that have to be done during that process from, you know, not only taking the ideas and developing
and
prototypes.
The trials and...
Well, some require extensive trials and some do not. So if there is another product that's already commercially available, already approved by the FDA that's very similar.
So you don't have to go through it? You can kind of ride the coattails of that previous
exactly.
one?
Exactly. You still have a certain set of testing, you know, biocompatibility and some other testing that you have to do to prove that it's going to be safe.
Right.
And perform similarly to the other product, but you don't have to reinvent the wheel with all the clinical trials.
Now, how Atlanta-centric is SIMTA?
We are based in Atlanta, and certainly in the early years, it was very focused on Atlanta. We've, in the past 2 years, put a large focus on regional outreach and expanding our exposure.
And what's your definition of the region for the Southeast?
Georgia and the surrounding states, so Tennessee, the Carolinas, Florida, and Alabama.
Are you getting are they getting involved?
They are, and this is how we've approached it. We're, you know, each of those states has their own little hotbed of technology or companies that are starting, but it's kind of spread out. But each of those areas has their own association, whether it's a bio organization or specifically a medical device organization, but something that supports that industry in that locale. We're not going in and setting up CIMDA chapters in these locations.
Right.
They've already done it.
Right. Why duplicate the effort?
Right. But we want to support them. And our ultimate goal is to connect, you know, somebody in Memphis with somebody in Tampa so that as a region we become stronger.
Are they open to that conversation?
They are, because it oftentimes means more content or new content for educational purposes, as well as connections for, you know, getting things done if you need some of those resources Lynn talked about.
Now, in this February event, are people coming from all over?
It depends on the event. Oh, for the for our quarterly meetings, that usually is local, although Ashley last year did a tremendous job of taking one of our programs out on the road and went to
Memphis and went to Greenville, South Carolina.
And shared information on the medical device tax.
Right. So as part of this regional outreach and connecting with the existing associations throughout the region, we're trying to provide content. So we may have one of our quarterly meetings with a certain topic, and we're structuring those meetings now so that they'll apply to the, you know, it's not just Georgia focused,
right,
but it can go on the road and be applicable to folks in the other areas. And so we're doing joint meetings with those associations throughout the Southeast now.
But yeah, for the big annual conference, we do bring people in not only from the Southeast, but nationally. So especially from an investor standpoint, this is a place where an investor can come and see medical device
MDDS, medical device data systems. That's a new piece. I can explain that a little bit more in a moment, but I'll let Lynn finish with her thought process.
So we bring in the investors to look at these companies. We bring in people that want to get access to very specific types of information. So you're not going in to say how to manage your employees. This is more how to obtain a 510K from the FDA. How to protect your intellectual property? What are predicate devices, which Ashley was talking about earlier? So
how to get funding?
There's a lot of funding. They're always looking for money, aren't we all? Though, so and it's a great way for companies to come. So we have the big companies come in, and they're looking for new. It's much cheaper for them to buy a technology than to develop a technology, which may or may not work. So we have the big companies in there that are looking to partner, to license or purchase technology and or a company.
So does this thing, this world sort of cycle into different themes like this year or these couple of years are a whole lot of companies aiming at solving a specific problem? So you got 8, 10, 12 devices all aimed at solving a specific problem? Or do you got everybody going after a bunch of different problems?
It's all over the map.
Yeah?
I mean, there are a lot of problems out there. And so
there's plenty to choose from,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. There's not really a focused concentration. I mean, now different areas, like for instance, I mentioned Memphis earlier.
Yeah.
The industry, the device industry in Memphis is very focused on spinal orthopedics. So, you know, in that area, you may have several companies, you know, focusing on spine surgery. But across the whole region, we get it all.
So normally you think of a medical device as something that you implant or attach, that it's a device, it's something you can hold. But just recently in the past year, the FDA has changed that and has increased the definition, really expanded the definition. Ashley, you want to talk about the MDDS?
Sure. That's medical device data systems. And so traditionally, as Lynn said, you know, an implant, a pacemaker, a knee joint or something like that is what traditionally people think. But also imaging systems, X-ray machines, those are also devices. Some diagnostics are considered devices. But some things, such as the Da Vinci robot, robotic surgery, there's a lot of software built into those. So there has been an element of IT, health IT, that has already been associated with existing systems and devices, so that's already regulated. What the FDA has started doing now, they took the whole health IT world, which is for the most part not device-related. It's sort of like EMR systems, right, medical record systems. Those aren't devices. But there are some devices, some software packages that pull data from a medical device, do some analysis, and spit back some answers, okay?
Cool.
To be very simplistic. the FDA took that slice of the health IT world and now considers that a device and now regulates it under the CDRH.
Wow. Well, like, take that Da Vinci robot. Like, part of that is like a kid's video game, right? There's components of it that are it's like a video game, right?
Yeah, so...
But some parts are like in your body, so that I'm sure that they would want to regulate.
Exactly. So the patient would be lying on the table, and it's laparoscopic surgery. So just like a traditional manual laparoscopic surgery, there are different access ports called trocars that are placed in the, depending on where the surgery is, but a lot of times in the abdomen, for instance. But the device and the surgeon are actually... They can be on the other side of the room. They could probably even be down the hall. But they could even be in the room.
In another country, right? I've seen that on TV.
Yes, it's very possible.
Well, if you saw it on TV.
It must be true.
But there's a console that they actually sit down in front of, and it has controls similar to a video game. I mean, not exactly like the buttons you'd find on, you know, Asteroids or something. and so that tells you how much I know about video games. And once they got more than one button, I stopped.
You were out, right.
So these surgeons then lean over and peer into this three-dimensional display that shows the internals and where the surgery is taking place and, you know, the different instruments that they stick in, whether it's, you know, some scissors or some forceps or something
like
that.
And as they're doing that in that virtual world, it's happening in real life.
Yes, yes. That's pretty amazing technology.
The advantage being that you can make a one-inch hole and put the little device in there, so you make a one-inch slit on either side of the abdomen, put that in, and you basically have hands inside of there, so you think about how big the hole would really have to be to put your hand in there.
So it's much smaller, so that means the patient's in and out faster. And
minimally invasive. It's way to go.
But so that's an example, though, of combining some maybe technology that wouldn't have been regulated before with something that's being regulated now because it's touching like kind of the software side and the hardware side?
Well, I think the software involved with the Da Vinci robot has always been up under the umbrella of the Da Vinci robot device. So an example would be some kind of software that does some diagnostic analysis. Maybe it's on some type of blood analysis, different components in the blood. Maybe it does some analysis on that, spits out some answers. Not necessarily diagnosis. I think the doctors still probably do that.
Right.
Yeah, so some information that decisions may be based on. I believe that's our understanding. Now, since this wasn't traditionally considered a device, you know, we in the device world are also trying to learn about it as well.
Right.
The health IT world understands it, but now they're trying to learn what does it mean to be a device, and we're trying to learn what, as a device association, how can we provide value for those companies?
So it seems like they're kind of coming together. They almost have to.
We're trying to, yes. I mean, yes, we are coming together, and so we're trying to, on both sides, trying to prepare.
So we had, famously, there was a company here in Atlanta, a software company, medical software company, that sit in their office one day, and they hear a knock on the door. And they open the door, and they go, "We're the FDA, and we're here to inspect you." And they went, "We don't have FDA inspection. We're not regulated by the FDA." And they went, "You are now." And so,
just out of the blue? Wow, that's crazy.
Happens to us all the time.
That's right. I think those are policemen at the door now, aren't they?
FCC police.
So the FDA suggests that it might cost about $30,000. Well, if you talk to these people, now they really concentrated on the quality, making sure everything met regulatory requirements. They've spent, I think, well over $1 million making this compliant under the FDA. Of course, it gives them a market advantage, but there are a lot of companies that are out there and they say, you know, and they go, "Oh, it doesn't cover me." And the lawyers look at it and they go, "Oh, yes, it does."
I want to rethink that.
So this is something that we're covering. So bringing it back around again, this is something that we're incorporating this year in the conference, because all of a sudden we're all in the same boat, although they were not happy about being in our boat.
I wouldn't think so.
So is there an advocacy dimension to what you guys do, or because legislation, regulation really impacts you guys? So, yeah?
There are associations that have a lobbying arm. Some national organizations like AdvaMed or Medical Device Manufacturers Association, and we have a relationship with them. We partner with them. However, since we're a regional group, and there are several states within our group, we really are not on the national stage, and since we already have representation through those other groups, we do not have a lobbying arm. I don't know if maybe sometime that's something we'll do in the future. I don't see it in the near future. That's just a whole different dimension. However, we are about making sure that our constituency understands what is happening.
Right. To make them aware and educate them.
Right.
Now, that's definitely one of the challenges that I guess these companies are facing now, the regulation. And did the new healthcare reform, is that impacting your industry at all?
Yeah, it is actually. It's one of the biggest topics, hottest topics in our industry right now is the medical device tax. It's part of the Healthcare Reform Act. And what it is a 2.3% excise tax on domestic sales. Now, it is only on domestic, but it's on sales. It's not on profits. So,
ouch.
It's kind of odd for our industry. And so the downsides are, if you're a startup company, let's say you're growing, you have gone commercial, you're about to reach profitability.
Right.
Oops. Your profitability is a few months down the road now. So right. That's going to increase some investment risk. So, some of the investors who have invested in some of these companies, that's something they're going to take into consideration. It's going to be longer before they get their return on investment. Existing companies, some other things that could happen, they're going to have to deal with these extra costs. One, they could try to pass it through to the customer, which would be the healthcare system, which, that doesn't necessarily work or help reduce healthcare costs.
By increasing healthcare costs.
But other ways they can manage it is, and different. So first of all, every company is different. Different ones are going to handle it different ways, but some will cut R&D. R&D spend, so that's going to impact innovation and new products and new therapies. Some of those aren't going to come to fruition because of that. They could also reduce headcount, which that's jobs. So that's another way some companies may deal with it. And I know of a couple of companies that have had planned for new manufacturing facilities to be built, and they've put them on the shelf because they're not going to make that investment right now. So it's just something, the industry will survive, and but we have to learn how to deal with it because there's going to be some negative impact from it.
Now, you're kind of in charge of the SEMDA, right? You're one of the leadership.
I'm a member.
Member and a leader.
It says Grand Poobah on his card.
Yeah, that's what I was alluding to. But that's it's a nonprofit, and it's a volunteer position, right?
So the association was all voluntary up until I became executive director. I was already a member and a volunteer.
Right.
The board of directors had done a great job. As Lynn said, they're active and involved. They'd done a great job growing the association up to that point, but felt that on a voluntary basis,
it was difficult.
They were sort of not to a limit, but it was more difficult to stretch regionally, which was the goal. So they wanted to have somebody that could have a touch it each week. And so it's just a slice of my time, but it's not all voluntary. I do put in a lot of voluntary hours too.
But you have a day job though.
I do.
And what is that?
I'm a commercialization consultant for physician inventors and small to mid-sized medical device companies.
And physician inventors, are there a lot of them out there?
There are.
You would think they'd be so busy with their patient when.
So take a surgeon for instance. He's doing a certain type of procedure three or four times a week.
And he's like, I know there's got to be a better way.
Exactly. And, not all the ideas are good, but some of them are very good.
That's got to be a fun gig, though, having people come to you with ideas. That's got to be a blast.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, it has its challenges, but it is a lot of fun. I enjoy it.
And because they are busy people, that's why they need somebody like Ashley that has that expertise. And we just talked about how complicated it is to bring something like this to market.
Right. It's not like they can just, put it on QVC. There's a lot of steps.
No. And it's not like you can build a software program and be up and live the next day. This is something that's going to take years and a lot of expertise. And so that's where a consultant and somebody like Invetica can bring in these different people.
All the resources in a turnkey way to just knock it out.
Right. Exactly. A surgeon, there's a lot of work going, as we mentioned, a lot of work to commercializing a medical device. And a surgeon just really... Some surgeons have successfully done it while they're still in the operating room, but a lot of times they would have to be willing to spend less time in the operating room to build their baby.
Do you have an example you can share of some you took to market?
I've been involved. I've been doing it 3 years, and so within other companies I have helped commercialize products, but on my own as a consultant, these are long projects.
Sure.
I am currently involved in a couple of projects that are within that you know, halfway down the road, close. Not commercial yet.
Now, can you walk us through, like, what's that engagement look like?
It's like the Shark Tank. He's a one-man Shark Tank.
So a surgeon will come up to you and say, hey, I got this idea, and you're going to go, yes or no?
No, I'll go have coffee with him and learn, you know, what it's all about.
Is it typically surgeons?
So far it has been. And, you know, I get probably one or two referrals every month or so. And
a lot of people just have physician. Ideas just to kind of kick it around to see if there's something there or not.
Right. And some have already taken it,
done some down the road.
So they've got some IP, or maybe they're working on some, you know, patent, or they've maybe had a prototype built.
Well, what's been the craziest thing where you're like, that's ridiculous?
You don't have to
name their name, but just like some
What's
idea.
What's this guy's name, phone number? We want to get him on the air and make fun of him.
No, I don't want to go there. Sorry.
Listen, I'll tell you one time. I'll tell you, because this is so long ago, and I can't remember the guy's name to begin with. But you have some interesting people who are truly committed to improving everyone's life. So we had a guy come in our office one time, and he wanted us to help us market. He had written a book. And he wanted to be an authority because he could read brains.
He could read them?
He could read them. And he would teach you in his book how you could read brains, too. And he didn't have a medical degree or any sort of advanced degree or anything, but he had come up with this way to read brains.
And you said, can you read mine right now? What am I thinking?
We smiled very politely and thanked him
and sent him on his way.
But, I mean, what a rewarding field of work to be involved in designing and bringing to market medical devices that are saving lives and making life more comfortable and more pleasurable for, you know, that's fantastic.
And that's, at the end of the day, that's what it's about, is helping patients. I mean, there is an investment piece to that, but the whole goal is to help patients.
Now, do you have any tips for somebody who's bringing a product to market?
Yeah, actually, first of all, know your market and make sure that it is truly an unmet need.
The brain reading. That's a no.
Yeah, it's not.
Solving problems that don't exist.
For the inventor, whether it's a physician or not, you know, it may be a no-brainer, right? They may say, well, this is a great idea, but you may be the only one. So you don't want to sink a lot of money into an idea, getting, you know, patents and all this other stuff, and then find out that no one else wants to buy it. So understand what the need is that you're addressing. Also, get help. And that's sort of what I do. But do as much as you can on your own, certainly, to save money. But there are certain things you want to get professional help with. And a lot of the legal type things, you'd want to get professional help.
So like patents and trademarks and things like that?
Patents, maybe even setting up your company. If you're going into a business as a partner with someone else, there, you know, that's a lot different than starting it up and you're the sole owner. So there are a lot of legal...
Are you a lawyer or a patent?
No. So I'm a business guy.
You're a business guy that's consulting and helping them give... connecting them with
but
the proper
But we know
research.
Lots of lawyers. Well, and very good lawyers.
And that's my business model is I know the process. I'm experienced in the process of taking...
From beginning
soup to
end.
Soup to nuts, right.
Yeah, taking an idea all the way through the development cycle and commercializing it. And I know... I'm not the subject matter expert on any of that stuff, but I know who is.
Right.
And I know when they need to be brought in. So basically, I'm a glorified...
So you're the
project manager.
Right, well, you're the quarterback. You're deciding, you're moving the ball down the field.
Exactly. And so I'm pretty much a virtual company and bringing those skill positions in when they're needed.
So when you first meet them, though, and they sit down for coffee, they probably think their idea is about to save the world. So are they nervous about sharing the idea with you? You have to kind of reassure them that you're not going to take it and run with it, right?
Absolutely. I think confidentiality is one of the most important things. You know, an inventor, you know, doesn't want to give their idea away, and I shouldn't want to take it. So, you know, sometimes those conversations just happen with some verbal trust or handshakes, but I'm, you know, always... they don't bring it up, I'll usually bring it up. Do we need to sign an NDA or something like that?
Hey, how many NDAs do you have out there, Ashley? I have. I can't talk about anything. I'm not even sure I can tell you what I had for breakfast this morning.
I've got quite a few.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes do you have to manage the expectations of the inventor? Do they think like, hey, I got this idea, and as soon as I, you know, tell you about it, you'll call that company and they're going to license this from me and I don't have to do anything. I'll just sit back and get a check.
Yeah, that's one of the big things I've run into is everybody thinks it's going to be quick and easy, but it's not. First of all, it takes a lot more money than you think, and it takes a lot longer time than you think. And that's why.
But it's a really good idea. Can't you see? It's right here in my head.
Well, and here's the other thing. So if it will make a replacing a knee, if it will make replacing a knee 10% easier, but it costs 50% more, yeah, insurance companies are not going to pay for it. And if the doctors have to learn something new and you have to introduce it, not going to do it.
Well, and the environment's changed a little over the past few years. Now it's more difficult to get funding to go through this expensive process. And even, you know, not only are venture capitalists more wary, or, you know, they're a little more critical of what the idea is, so are the companies that may license the technology. I find more and more the companies are, you know, they expect the inventor and the development team to have taken it further down the development path than they used to. Now I hear companies say, we would like for you to take it to where it's almost ready for commercialization, which, you know,
then
that's,
why do I need you?
Right, right. So then
I've taken all the risk and taken all the time, but and I would like to give it to you so you can make money off of it.
But that's the way it is nowadays, and right. So, in, you know, potential or inventors or potential startup guys need to realize that
wow.
is
going to change the landscape.
They're going to need to take it further than they thought.
And let me mention, from a marketing standpoint, one of the good things about hooking up with a big company at the commercialization stage is that they have the team in place to go out and sell it. It's one of those, if you build a better mousetrap, if you build a better knee, they're not going to flock to your door.
Right, so that's still not good enough. You Mm-mm. still need the distribution and that kind of big
right.
player that's going to get it into all the places it has to be.
Yeah.
But it's all about creating value. If you develop something and license it immediately, you may be able to get some money for it. But
you also have to manage the expectations of the amount of money they're going to get, too, right?
That's the point, is the more you can do on your own, the more valuable it is,
right.
And the more you should be able to get in a licensing deal or something like that.
But when you start looking at some of these, especially you start getting into some of the rehabilitation where you have an artificial hand.
Right.
And you have a foot, you know, or some of these very dynamic things that are going on. When you look at the things that can be done with patients these days, somebody that's had a heart attack or a stroke, and there's new catheters that can go in and help clear an obstruction without having to crack a chest open. These kinds of things are so exciting, and these are people that are truly committed. Really, most of them, I think, are not so much in it for the money. They are more in it that this is a good idea and this will better the patient's lives.
Right. So if somebody wants to learn more about SEMDA?
www.semda.net.
And then is there information on the February event on there?
The conference is certainly on there. If you go to the conference one, sign up. And by the way,
yes.
Let me mention to you, you should do that right now, or at least before December 31st. And we have a couple deadlines coming up for this. One, December 31st. Can we please roll back the clock to September?
Yes,
that would
please.
Be awesome. But December 31st, early bird registration ends. The price goes up $100.
Okay.
Two, if you have an invention, if you have a company and you're interested in presenting to investors, and we have some tremendous success stories in the past, most of these things are confidential, so I can't tell you. We've got some quotes from people who say it's a great experience, it's a great thing to do, it's free to apply to present, and those are due on January the 9th. And if we have any students listening instead of sitting in class, then they should also apply. We have a poster competition, and so we have people that are, we submit scientific posters that are there, and it's a very interesting way to get your invention, very early stage invention or idea, in front of people that can help you develop it.
And that doesn't have to be just students. Anyone out there, any inventor who isn't
it's
quite
true.
Ready to present for, you know, to a venture capitalist,
right.
But has some technology that they'd like to sort of promote, they can apply to have a poster as well.
And finally, sponsorships are available.
Really?
Hey, we can't do it without our sponsors.
They're
we
tremendous.
We certainly appreciate them. And like I said, we are able to provide value to our attendees because of that.
Now, an attendee, who would be a kind of the area of an attendee?
So any of those that I mentioned for
right.
that qualify for membership, but also potential sponsors, people that provide services to the industry, universities. We would like to see as many researchers and students and professors and incubators represented there as possible.
Anyone related to the medical device field? Or that's interested in what's going on. We have a gala dinner. We have one-to-one partnering where you can schedule things in advance to meet with someone and exchange ideas. We have a lot of vendors to the industry come to this. It's a great place for people to come if they want to promote their company, if they want to meet other people within the industry. So we have manufacturers come. We have a lot of IP attorneys. And we have because that is very critical for this industry because sure. You want to protect it. So it's an interesting mix of people.
And your day job, do you want to share the website for them?
I don't have a website. It's all word yes. of mouth.
It's all word
yeah.
of mouth?
Yeah, we're working on that one, Ash. Yeah. We're working on that.
Lynn's helping me out. You know, when I first started doing
that's
that
exclusive,
3 years
man.
Ago.
No business card, no website.
He's so like Hitch. He's like Hitch. Remember that movie?
Right.
I just got a new logo, so we're changing up my corporate
you,
image.
Right? On the down low.
So, but if they want to email you, it's Ashley.
No.
No.
No, that's not it.
It's innovetica.llc@gmail.com.
Now, where does Innovetica come from? Spell it for me.
Innovetica. I wanted the name, I wanted innovation in
right.
In
and
the name.
Helvetica? You like Helvetica?
No, it's actually, yeah, that's the font I use. No, I'm just kidding. No, when I was in my graduate program, and I previously was in the chemical industry, and I wanted to change to something else, either pharma or device. Before I decided on device, the one company, as I was doing this research, the one company I remember was AstraZeneca. And it was there's something about that ICA at the end that I don't think anybody ever forgets, and so I don't want to be forgotten.
So you combine them.
I think right. The Innovetica name is really – is very innovative.
It's innovative.
Very innovative, yes.
If you can pronounce it.
Good stuff. Well, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. This is another episode of Disruptive Healthcare. We will see you all next week at 9:30 on Fridays.